Maxwell and Melbourne Football Club. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
This is Nat Fife from the Fremantle Footy Club.
Trent Cotchin from the Richmond Footy Club.
Scott Benderbury from the Collingwood Football Club. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
Patrick Cooch from the Carlton Footy Club.
It's Rory Sloane here from the Adelaide Crows.
This is Tom Mitchell. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
Hey friends, it's MJ from the Coaches Panel. I hope you're well. Welcome to our first strategy roundtable for 2024. This is an AFL fantasy focused episode. You're going to get three podcasts from us every single week. An AFL fantasy strategy roundtable, a super coach strategy roundtable, and for our Patreons and Spotify subscribers, you'll also get a round review. That is already out if you want to get it. But today, I've assembled some of the fine members of the Coaches Panel to help you with your AFL fantasy side. For a man that has already dubbed himself the winner of the Hilux for 2024, it's Rids. Hello, mate. How are you?
Yeah, it's about time, mate, that people start recognising me, yeah?
Or just, you know, DT winner in 2020, Hilux winner in 2024. If we're not careful, you'll head to Dossie areas. So just watch yourself before you pre-dub yourself. Speaking of Dossie areas, a regular part of the Pod and the Coaches Panel, you hear him a lot more in the Pod, but he is equally a valued part of what we do here at the Coaches Panel. It's Louis, mate. Nice to have you back on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks, mate. It's been a minute. Thought, what better podcast to join back up round one when it's most relevant, when there's so many avenues for coaches to think about.
100%. And Mini Monk, you've been a part of the Coaches Panel now for well over 12 months. Had a fantastic preseason. I'm no doubt that's going to continue on in this season. It's good to have you back on the pod, mate.
It's good to be back on, and let's digest this round one.
Let's jump in. There is so much I want to talk about. There's probably like half a dozen to a dozen players I want to get your boys' advice on. We want to talk about the Content Creators Cup, and I want to have an update to see how you boys went that the guys at AFL Fantasy Fanatics have put together. Want to help coaches that feel like nine games of footy, one round in, they just have not started the year the way they wanted to. So we want to give some coaches that are feeling a little bit disappointed or frustrated that after all this work in the preseason, it's gone pear-shaped after week one already. We want to get you back on the straight and narrow, but probably the thing that we need to start off with front and center, and maybe Louis will start with you and then work our way through some of the other members of the panel, is the first 6 weeks of your AFL fantasy season do have a different look and feel about it to the other quarters of the season. So for a coach, as we're now one round in, we know there's some uniquenesses about this year, which we'll get to as well. But in a general overlayer, what should be a coach's focus over these first 6 weeks of AFL fantasy, Louis?
Oh, well, you know, the first 6 weeks of your fantasy side is pretty much the most important that you're going to have. We all roll in with a starting squad. It's impossible to get it perfect. If you do, you're well on your way to a Hilux, a little bit like PB, my friend here. But the first 2-3 weeks are all about pivoting. As I said, it's not going to be a perfect starting squad. And there's going to be players that pop out that maybe you weren't considering or maybe almost forced your hand. And we do have a couple of those that we'll discuss a little bit later on in the podcast. But you want to set yourself up from a seasonal aspect. So it can be quite easy to get quite down in the dumps, focus on the negatives, and maybe a few scores don't necessarily go your way in AFL fantasy. It's flattening. I've been there. I'm currently there. Sometimes you do have to focus on the positives and start to look towards what you can do to not only get points on the board, but to also set yourself up a little bit later in terms of your cash generation and turning your side into a fully completed side before other coaches, where you can really start to generate points on the rest of the competition with this sort of war chest that you've built up over the season. And that starts in the first 6 weeks. We've got rookies that are coming out of the woodwork, debuting, playing after a couple of years. They can come out, hit the ground running, have a low break even. Those are the ones that we want to be identifying first, jumping on, because that's where the majority of your cash generation is going to come from early. But also something we've seen in recent years is that the mid prices are also popping equally just about, and generating that cash as well as scoring too. So, and we're going to discuss probably three or four of those a little bit later on. We'll go in depth there. You want to identify them too and really get that team value ticking over, because it's less about points at the moment, even more so now that it's best 18. You sort of want to make sure that you're making the necessary steps to have your team in a better spot come, you know, probably the mid-season buyers, because right now there's a lot of sort of blurriness around what's going on, I think.
Yeah, it's a good shout. Mini Monk, he brought up this, you know, the terminology around a break even, which if you've played AFL fantasy for a number of years, you're very familiar in trying to get guys with low, negative, or very highly attainable break evens. But there's this interesting, dilemma's the wrong phrase, but we know how important it is to chase players with a low break even early. We also know how important it is to increase our team value. How early do we start to prioritize one over the other? Is this now, is it all about break even? Are we always focused on increasing our team value? Because I feel like that is a focus that coaches are pondering at this stage of the season too.
I think in the first few weeks of the season, it's almost definitely about maximizing your team value. You have to chase those really low break even. So like, if you go to the stats page, you've got the premium subscription at AFL Fantasy, you can see the break evens in order of all of those players. And if you haven't got, you know, 5, 6, 7, or 8 of those maybe top 15 players with those low break evens, they need to be your top priority. Like I'm talking the likes of the ones that likely people have missed are players like Ollie Dempsey and Jeremy Sharp. But then there's also Campbell, Gallagher, Cadman, Dean. Those low break evens make the biggest difference in building your team value, because you might say, well, my points are behind them. 150, 200, 250 points where I wanted to be competitive at this start of the year. You can make that back so quickly towards the end of the season. If you get half a premium to a premium further upgraded in those early rounds, say round 6, round 7, round 8, that's 50 points a week that you're making up on the entire pack. And that's where the difference comes. And that's why prioritizing that cash generation early makes the big difference.
Rids, I want to ask you before we start talking about coaches that feel like they've had a slow or a disappointing start, or some other specific players, what's an overarching mindset we should be walking into? I know Louis's done some great stuff and so's Mini Monk to frame us in, but to close it out, is there any gaps that you feel like we need to cover off there to look at, yeah, before we wrap out the 6 weeks, not just because it's where the buys end, but just in general, any bit of advice you'd want to give coaches for AF?
Look, I mean, round one always throws up weird results. That's the first thing, okay? You got people that come into the game, they think they're match fit. Players don't really feel like they're never match fit. But round one, they find out that maybe they aren't as much fit as what they thought they were. And I mean, we saw that with Maxi Gawn in opening round last week, yeah? So he came out. He sort of faded late. It was one of those games that wasn't great. It was slippery. It was very arduous for him. He sort of died late. But look what he does in the next week. It's really, really telling, yeah? So it's just a weird round. So the first thing I want to say is, don't focus on your ranking in this point in time. Focus on, have I got those names that Monk just said, Rodio? Have I got those key what do they call these days? The pillars of your team, your money generation team? Do I have the guys? Who do I want to get out of the guys that I don't have? How am I going to get to them? Who am I going to trade out to get there? What can I do? What line is the best one? And then on top of all that, best 18 gets thrown knocking on the door straight away. So suddenly we're going, hey, listen, focus on your dollar build. Focus on your money gen. But best 18 is, and we know this, you know, from years gone by, it's definitely not about cash. And the interesting thing about Monk's list that he just read out a second ago, they're all rookies. Like, of course, they're going to have the best break evens, but that doesn't mean they're going to generate the most cash for the week. Because sometimes, and we've seen it many times before, a mid-pricer has more scoring potential than a rookie, for instance. Like a Cadman comes out and does a 50 or a 60. He may actually, you know, however you want to work it, how much is he going to generate? And is he the best fit for your team? You might have DPP guys in the midfield right now on your bench that you want to swing into your forwards. There's a whole real, there's variables all over the place, yeah? So, I mean, it's up to you to determine what you're going to focus on, but ranking's never a good one to focus after one or two rounds.
No, the reality is, 50 points can be the difference with 10,000 positions from a ranking perspective in AFL fantasy. It's the difference between fielding a McKercher or a Sanders this week. Like, it is as simple as that one thing. It's the difference between getting a captaincy score of a Jack Steele versus a Tom Green or a Caleb Sarong. Like, these are the level of differences that we're talking, where it's hundreds of points can be moved, and there's lots of variables that Rids has just mentioned that can be coming through there. I want to pick up on the best 18 in a moment, because there are some new nuances around it, but you brought up this idea, both Louis and Rids, and want to talk coaches that probably feel themselves in this similar spot, which is, I'm not really happy with where I find myself. Round one has come and gone. I either last minute made an adjustment to the team that I wasn't happy with. That could have been a hand forced due to an injury or a poor structural score. We talked over on Twitter Spaces, myself and Monk did a Saturday pop-up episode about the Grundy Gambit. Lots of people made changes there. Reed and Gibkiss go down with injuries early in the round. This impacts the way it is. So there's lots of different ways where you are looking at your team Sunday night going, I really don't like what I'm looking at. Mini Monk, how do we help coaches that feel like they've had a bad start pick themselves back up off the floor for a 23 weeks to go? Because it is easy to get discouraged. Mm. You know you've got a good team on paper. And it is the difference between three or four things just not going your way, from having a good week and finishing in the top couple of thousand to you are in a position where you're like, man, I'm 20,000, 30,000, and my team's not that bad, but I guess I am. Help me get some coaches through that position, man.
There's a few different ways you can go about it. I think the one that I would go to is that you're not alone. There's a lot of coaches that would consider themselves as being, you know, quite good at AFL fantasy who haven't had a great start, but that's okay. Like, if you feel like your team's in a good spot, if you feel like you've got a lot of the mid prices, the premiums and the rookies that you needed to, and you just made a couple of small decisions, it's a learning experience. You can learn from those decisions and correct them for next week. Another thing you can do is maybe go have a look at some of those teams in the top 5, 10, 50, 100. Have a look at how they're structured and have a look at some of their benches. There are some very, very thin ones, to say the least, that will require a fair bit of correction if they're wanting to stay up at those high ranks. And remember that it's a 24-round season. It's not a one-round season. If your rank was determined by the end of round one, you would have structured up differently. You would have targeted matchups. You would have targeted players for ceiling. But we're not doing that. We're trying to build a team that maximizes its team value and maximizes the points that you can get on field in the middle and towards back up the season, and that the spike will come late. We see it almost every year. The top 100 teams at the end of round one very rarely stay inside the top 100 for the rest of the season. It is so hard to do that. And you'll get teams from 10, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 that will make their way into the top 1,000, top 100, top 10 from this point onwards. That's what it is. It's a long season. It's a trading game. There is so much ground that you can make back up just by making a few correct decisions in these first few rounds.
Yeah, it's a good shout. Louis, what's your take? You referenced you didn't feel like you had the start to the season that you'd kind of hoped of. Take the emotion out of it and the frustration out of it. Where do you go as a coach? Because you're a really smart, switched on coach. A lot of people know and see that and respect that. So help people that feel that way too. What are you doing mentally, tactically, structurally to go, you know what, I'm attacking with my trade moves? What are you looking to do this week and next week?
I think Mark nailed it there. He pretty much said that it is a longer season. It's not, you know, if it was a 1 week sort of go, we'd be playing a totally different game. You need to set yourself up from a seasonal aspect, and that's exactly what I'll be doing. So I didn't have the greatest round coming out of round one. I've got plenty of players that I like, and like you said, MJ, I probably only missed three or four. If I went the other direction, I'd be, you know, hanging from the rooftops with a 21.50. So it doesn't take much. It only takes a few things to go your way or not to go your way, and you can find yourself in this situation. But I think you need to focus on setting yourself up from here. So cash generation is a really good place to start. Monk touched on it earlier. You generate that cash quickly early, and that can be the difference between you and another coach going from a mid-pricer to a premium. And all of a sudden, it doesn't seem as daunting to chase down 30, 40, 50 points a week because you've gotten on first and you're on to the next move. You can quickly identify that, stay agile, flexible. And that's what it's about, really. You need to keep your eye on the footy, keep your eye on who the players that are trending, the break evens, all of that, and set yourself up in a nice position to be able to not only jump onto those players, but jump onto them first, which means that you do need to be a little bit astute. But that can be done quite comfortably through a range of different players, depending on your side. So that's sort of where I'm at. I'm going to be focusing on that cash generation. The points, they'll sort themselves out to some respect. I'm definitely not going to leave them by the wayside, but I am acknowledging that I can get them a little bit later as well. I think these early rounds, it literally does just come down to generating that cash to get the points later.
Yeah, it's a good shout. And despite you feeling like you didn't have the week you wanted to, all four of us have landed in the Fantasy Fanatics Content Creators Cup. But if we were to roll call who got a win this weekend, you, myself, are in the top eight. So can't be doing that bad. I think it was yourself and did Mug Jag a victory as well? Was that?
I did. I got a victory over, I think it was Harmy in the end. It was a closer one than I thought it was going to be. He snuck up on me at the end. It was only 15 points, I think.
There you go. All right. Well, Rids and I aren't going to talk about the results this weekend. But Rids, I do want to come back to this idea of if you've had a bad start, and maybe it's not the right link to get there, but everybody's got a different way they have approached their team structures. And I suppose, for example, there were some coaches, not a huge amount, but there are a few thousand coaches that, for example, picked a Brody Grundy, put him on the bench, partially to prepare for the loophole, was probably the main driver. The second was to protect a potential underwhelming score, which we definitely got. That's a lot of money, Rids, that was sitting on the bench that wasn't activated. So while we talk about people that have a slow start or a disappointing start potentially, there's a lot of things we've just got to acknowledge are different variables with every different team at the moment, Rids, that maybe will present themselves with a little bit more balance over the next 6 to 12 weeks.
So, and you know, I hate talking about my own team, okay? Yes. But I'm just going to throw up an example right now. Like, I know that we're joking around saying bad starts and everything else, but everyone sets up their team differently, okay? So everyone might go, you might have four mid-rooks, okay? Because that's how you felt was the way to go. Or you might have three or four premiums in defense. And just because one of those didn't work, that doesn't mean you throw the baby out with the bathwater either. So for instance, I'll just give a little story about my weekend, okay? I was one of those coaches that had Grundy on the bench. Hmm. Now, we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about the three rucks, you know, the three value, Gorn, Grundy, and Cherry. And how DT Lemon tweeted a few weeks ago saying, and I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, I had explored that pretty thoroughly, Radio. So having Grundy on the bench being underwhelming, it was never about the points though, MJ. It's the way that he looked and limiting myself and handcuffing myself, okay, for future trades that I want to go and target. So I did pivot to have those three rucks set up because I had played with it 2 weeks ago and I was actually okay with the team.
It wasn't a panic move. It was a calculated decision that you'd made. It was a parachute you could pull because you
knew. Yeah, so pretty much I was able to get Gorn into R1, okay, with two trades in my team because I knew what they were. like two other trades. And that was, and we also discussed about Bonner, okay? Mm. And I mentioned at the time, Bonner was always my pivot. Now, I didn't want to use him as the first option to go there because, as I said the other week, I didn't want to be fooled, you know, because I just knew. But if something happens and you're agile, I think Louis says it beautifully just before with agility, you just got to be agile. And unfortunately, though, it means you're going to be handcuffed to your mouse and your keyboard through the whole weekend, game to game to game to game. Some of us just don't have that availability. Some of us are parents. Some of us have got other things. We work
on the weekends, sport.
You know what?
Other halves, missos.
It sucks, yeah. Yeah, whether it's a miso, who knows? You know, you might be traveling around the world, taking your caps around the world, showing everyone as you travel to Japan and everyone. Who knows where you end up with that? But the fact of the matter is everyone has challenges in life, okay?
Yeah, totally.
Everyone has everything, but everyone sets up with a different structure. So what is perceived as a bad start may actually not be a bad start, yeah?
Yeah, it's a good shout, Louis.
Yeah, I was just going to say, piggybacking on that agility type thing is what I really find helps me is I'll do my trades, I'll look at my team, and then I'll start thinking about next week's trade. So where can I, if I'm locking in these trades, where can I go next? How can I set myself up best to attack that following week and then the following week? And it sort of sorts itself out from there. And you end up finding these little wormholes where you go, oh, you know, hang on, if I do this trade, leave 80K in the bank, I can use a bit of DPP here. If this guy fires off, I can grab him and I'm on first and then I can do something on the other end and away I go. So yeah, it's all about giving yourself that best opportunity to succeed, which does take a little bit of extra effort, of course, as everything does, but it sets you up in the long run a lot better.
Yeah, Mini. Yeah.
And a lot of these early rounds, the trade outs can be pretty obvious, especially as we're coming into some of these early buys as well. Like when we look at, say, the round 5 buy, when we've got Sydney and Collingwood playing on it, a lot of teams will have Dacos. A lot of teams have started Grundy, Heaney, Jordan, Roberts. A couple of those guys are probably players that you're either going to be looking to trade at round 4 or on their buy at round 5. Now, obviously, Dacos is probably someone that you're keeping for the longer run. So you factor that in and you build your team around that. But these are the sorts of planning that you can do, you know, not only for just the next round, as Louis is saying, but for, you know, round 4, round 5. Like that's how you can start to look at it. Obviously, you can't lock in the exact players that you're moving out, the exact players that you're moving in. That's way too hard at this stage of the season. That's how you can start to look at when we get to the mid-season buys. But it's a good idea to kind of think about, right, if I'm going to be trading 2 defenders at round 5, do I want to bring an extra one in a couple of weeks earlier, so I give myself a flexibility to be able to target another player who's got a low break even or a good matchup, or as the price is right, or a rookie who's popped. Have those sorts of things in mind when you're planning at this early stage as well.
Yeah, telegraphing.
And I think the most important thing, MJ, yeah. And I'm talking over you, I know that, but yeah, I do that every week, so you're used to it, yeah? Hey, at the end of the day, you have to do your planning before the round starts, if you are going to be time poor through the round, whether you're working, whether you've got kids, whatever you're doing, okay? So make sure you look at the fixture. Make sure you look at when the timing of the games is. Make sure you set your team up. Make sure you go and play with it and reverse your trades just to see what it looks like. What's your pivot going to be? And there's a little saying that goes out there, okay, about sweeping the shed, but it just means that you're actually just doing your homework, okay? You're making things right. You're being a winning culture. You just got to set yourself up to go and enjoy the game and do everything else. But if something happens, and we live in this world now that where everything's instant on your phone, okay, 1 second after it happens, we're all going to be knowing about it, okay? We're not handcuffed to a computer anymore. We can do it on a phone. But the thing is, how are we going to handle those situations? Are you prepared? Have you looked at the options? What does it look like if you go this way? And it might be with the vests this year, you know, being named 10 minutes before, like an hour before the game or whatever it is.
Yeah.
like we may have to pivot, because I think on the weekend, wasn't there a green vest that came from someone that was named on the field? Like, yeah, and that was the first one.
It was Sardis. Sardis was named on field for Essendon and he got pulled and made the sub. And what a surprise, it's a Scott brother that does that to us.
So we're just going to have to play around, yeah, especially if the rookies. Lucky for us, the next four out of the next five games is best 18. So that score will drop off. So we don't have to be as prudent in that time frame, but it's still going to do you good to be ready for it.
100%. Best 18 kicks off this week. No Brisbane players, no Carlton players. Just playing the ownership percentage, it's pretty much Zach Williams that the vast majority of the community are navigating their way through. Where that might make things a little bit tricky is in AFL Fantasy, you might have rolled through one of Reed or Gibkus. I don't think too many will have done both unless they were rolling a really cheap backline and putting a house at D6. There'd be a few for sure, but that's probably the only pain point it comes for coaches there is they're now only having five live options pre-trade into that spot. Talk to me about this best 18, Louis. How can we expose this? While we might not have too many premiums that coaches will have missing this round, we should start to see it over the next few weeks. Green, Flanders, Whitfield, Goulden, maybe not as hotly owned as he was a fortnight ago after a slow opening round. But we are going to see after this first block of, well, the first week of bye, premiums start falling out of people's teams. And again, to Rid's point, the way people have structured it will impact their scoring. But how do we as coaches maximize this best 18 approach? And where can we get a little bit of an advantage knowing that it's only 18 on-field players that count for rounds 2, 3, 5, and 6?
Yeah. Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Yeah, and this is a great question, MJ, and one I'm keen to throw back to you fellas, because it's hugely relevant. This is something that we haven't experienced before. The way I'm looking at it at the moment is we've got some pretty solid rookies here, and I'll list off here Blake Howes, Colby McKersha, Jeremy Sharp, Riley Sanders, and Matt Roberts. None of them have scored less than 66, so they're doubling their price right off the bat. Even throw in a Darcy Wilson who goes 63, scratching at the heels there as well. For the first year in a couple of years, it feels like there's actually a depth of scoring rookie. And for that reason, I sort of feel like those players are going to be jostling for position towards the bottom end of our 18 anyway. Some might pop, like a McKersha could, or a Sharp, you know, who knows. But for the most part, those guys are going to be getting into our 18 anyway. So I go, okay, well, let's look at the top end then. Is that where I can start to find points? So you might have a Carl Amon, you might have an Ollie Wines, I'm struggling to think of a couple off the top of my head right now, but in that mid-price range where I might, John Newcomb, great call. You know, maybe they might putter along at 85, 90, maybe even 95, but can I find that advantage by going, okay, I've got 200K cash here. I'm going to put it on a John Newcomb's head, for example. And now the man on everyone's lips, I've got Caleb Sarong. I think he can go 115 for the rest of the year. I'm not saying that's the case, but all of a sudden you've found a way to differentiate yourself at the top end of that best 18, whereas at the bottom end, it feels like it's going to sort itself out amongst all the coaches, especially with all, not vanilla sides, but naturally we've all got similar sides to start because it's a well-informed competition these days and rookies don't really, you don't really miss on those rookies. And like I said, they're scoring. So I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that, Monk, and how you're approaching it.
I think that
there is a little bit more nuance to just saying all of these rookies are going to be at the bottom end of your scores. And whilst it's great that you're 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th scores in your 18th account, if you're 22 that are on field, are probably going to come from rookies. That doesn't mean that you can't jag a spike game out of a rookie if you're not fielding the right ones. Like if you've missed a Jeremy Sharp and you're not seeing that he's got North Melbourne this week under the roof at Marvel and that he's gone 110 before an AFL fantasy, like to me, that screams a player that you need to have on field this week because there's a potential that he can jag that spike score. And it's the same with the likes of Roberts, McKercher, Sanders. Like they do all have the potential to go 85, 90, 95. So in terms of going for someone at the top, like a Caleb Sarong, then yes, it's a great option. He can go 115 for the rest of the season. Might not happen, but we've seen that he can go 160 in a game, which is a huge ceiling. But you've also got to be aware of the structural, I guess, makeup of your team and making sure that you are putting the players on your field that can jag those by scores. Like if you're tossing up between a Blake Howes, a Nick Caulfield, a Toby Pink, a Charlie Dean as your D6, are really any of those four going to be someone that you're going to count in your best 18 scores? They're probably going to be making up that 21st, 22nd score. You're better off trying to have like a Yeo or a Young or a Salem or a Clark at D6 instead, because they're actually the ones that can elevate that scoring point upwards and give you the opportunities to jag as many of those spike scores out of, say, some of those midfielder rookies. So I think that that's where I'm trying to approach this best 18 through these early buy rounds.
I'm glad you highlighted that too, Monk, because I think that with these trades, we talked about how important they are in the early rounds. This presents a great opportunity to go, okay, well, maybe my scoring rookies are through the midfield and I've got one too many in the forward line, or I've got, as you mentioned, a Blake Howes I'm not totally confident with, maybe at D6. How can I restructure my side to give me the best opportunity that the rookies that could pop, and there's still an essence of rookie roulette, there always is going to be, but about putting yourself in that best situation that you can within your means, as I mentioned before.
Rids, I want to ask you about this best 18, because historically when we get to buys and it's in the middle portion of the season, we're just trying to maximize points on field. Whereas with a best 18 early in the year, we undoubtedly want to maximize points on field, but we don't want to lose the opportunity to generate cash. Are these two things, as we look at the trades we might consider this week, and we want to look at eight players specifically in a moment, do those two worlds still collide? Is it still about cash generation and also points maximization, or are we still prioritizing one over the other in best 18? Do we just copy that logic through, or is there a little bit more nuance to it?
So there's going to be really team specific, okay, how we do this. It's going to come down to who are your captain options, for instance, okay? If you don't have the captain options you thought you did entering that last round, you may need to explore, hey, I need to take a Newcomb up to a Bontempelli or a Rosie or whoever it is, okay, to say, I want to have that security of another captain option in my team. Having said that, though, if you started a more guns and rook approach, you might go, oh, I don't have Riley Bonner this week and I really need him. And I considered Newcomb was a gun at that point in time in that GNR setup. I could actually take Newcomb down to Bonner, free up a couple of hundred, and then go and put it on someone's head on the other side. That's still generating cash, MJ, both ways, okay? Depending on who you're targeting and whether their value and what's that score in their cycle, you can still make money out of those options. The thing that you really need to be careful with, though, do I have the must-have rooks? Okay. It doesn't always come down to whoever's got the best break even is the must have rook. It's also got to have a bit of balance about it. Who's got the best scoring potential? And I love that Monks mentioned Sharp, for instance. A coach may actually miss Jeremy Sharp and not understand, but he might actually make more money with a break even of 3 than what a Dempsey does at minus 10, because his scoring potential and his matchups allow him to do that. That's that's that nuance, okay, that you've got to go into and you've got to explain and you've got to really dig deep in your team. And that's why it's team specific, right? So it really does come down to that. But I can tell you now, though, MJ, I would very much be going, okay, what is my team? What is my goal for the next couple of weeks? Do I want to go and actually focus on the points? Because you can be aggressive over these best 18 weeks and hunt the points because everyone else is off looking at value, okay? Mm. But we do have two trades a week where we can actually go value with one trade and go and try and hunt the points with the other. So it's just that interesting balance right now, how it's going to work, because we've never had this. And I think you raised a great point. Best 18 for us is normally the mid-season buys, yeah, where we're very focused on points as the number one priority. Right now, we're trying to build our team value, generate some cash, making sure we set ourselves up for a long season. It's such a nuance that we haven't seen before. Who knows? It's just like an open playbook right now. Let's go and add. But if you see it differently to Monk, or if you see it differently to Louis, that doesn't mean you're wrong. That just means you should back it in and see how you go. If you think someone's an option that other people aren't talking about, make sure you go and explore. Use your sound logic, yeah? And go and try that, because we just don't know what's the right and what's wrong right now.
Well, we're going to find out. That's the beauty of it, is over the next 6 weeks, 10 weeks, and ultimately 23 weeks, we're going to get really good line of sight. We're starting a Tom Green and getting that bumper of a captaincy score to start. Is that the right play? Right now, it looks good. But in 2 weeks' time, when you don't have that and you've got a cow as an option coming through there, we will see. That's the beauty of it, is we are all learning together. I'll tell you what, MJ,
if you told me I'd have $716,000 player sitting at my R3 right now, a month ago, I would have just not even tried this year. I would have just deleted. That's what we're doing, okay? We've got so many new realms of possibilities right now. And because the quality of coach is getting higher and higher and higher, there's more ways to skin a cat being presented. It actually is viable no matter what. So instead of shutting things down, go and explore it and then come back with and tell us a reason why things aren't viable. Because I can tell you now, MJ, who would have thought Riley Bonner would be the number one headhunted cash cow right now?
Not anybody at the Port Adelaide list management. That is for sure. They were very happy to see him walk out the door. We want to talk about Bonner.
Don't get Louis started about Port Adelaide.
No. We'll keep it a pair-free zone, and we'll be okay for that. There are eight players I want to get your boys' thoughts on. We could talk about 30, but I think there's eight that are universally really important. It's Grundy, Cherry, Bonner, Sharp, D'Ambrosio, Billings, Sarong. I think I got those ones all right through there, give or take. If not, I'll come back to them. But maybe, Minnie, you could start us off around Brody Grundy. Part of it probably depends if you're a Cherry owner or not. That's probably at like two sides of the coin on the very
list. You beat me to it.
Sorry.
You didn't use the right term.
All right. Well, you do that. I'll go back to hosting. Brody Grundy, Minnie Monk on the coaches panel, ladies and gentlemen.
It's team dependent, as we always say. And I think that this comes back to what Ritz has been harping on about through the entire preseason. And he's been doing what I did with Sharp. And I think that it's coming to fruition with both of these players, that the players that you probably need to own in Tristan Cherry. If you've got Grundy, but you don't have Cherry, you're not going to trade Gornet, because chances are Gorn's probably the other ruck you've got. Or if you don't, you've got English and Marshall, who both performed exactly what you would want them to do for premium rucks. You're probably looking to flick him to Tristan Cherry. And understandably so. Cherry's gone 120 on the weekend. Grundy's gone 53. Cherry's at the lower break even, the lower price. You make money, you can fix your team in the process. But if you've got Grundy and Cherry, it's very hard to take Grundy up to a Gorn. It's very hard to take Grundy up to an English or to a Marshall or to whoever ruckman you want to go to, because chances are you have to go up. So I think if you've got Cherry, then that's where you're going to have to think about what situation you're in. But I think if you don't have Cherry, it is very easy to make that flip. And I think that that's probably one of the trades that I would be prioritizing very highly if I were in that position.
Louis, talk to me about Tristan Cherry. There are a bunch of guys that are really important for us to get into this week. For non-Tristan Cherry owners, again, the vaast majority will have a Gawn, Grundy, Marshall, English, and one of those four. There's probably someone that's got a bit of a unique thing, but those are the predominant four. For those that don't own Tristan Cherry, we don't know the other 29 variables, but is this one of, if not the most important trade that they need to make and to get in Tristan, or are there other variables that mean they could look elsewhere ahead of Tristan this week?
Mate, I think it's pretty bloody close, to be honest with you. I think majority of coaches that are bringing him in are obviously dropping down from a Grundy, but Tristan Cherry showed us everything we needed. He's a pretty young ruckman. Had a look at his numbers. He's going at 105 in the VFL and had a few injury troubles, as young rucks quite do at AFL level. And is finally given the keys to the Kangaroos midfield with Tyson, what's his name? Tyson Goldstein. Todd Goldstein departing. Had gold sack crossing my wires there, but this is the exact sort of pick you want, because it actually has a high floor. With ruckmans, I love picking them because they pretty much run out there with 20 points on their head straight away just on hit outs alone. And then what I like from his game was the 9 tackles. Now, he's not going to get 9 tackles every single week. We'll probably hover between 4 and 6 somewhere, but I feel like that's something that we can come to expect from Tristan Cherry. He's going to be that inside sort of aggressive type ruckman. I don't think he's going to be the one that gets played through like a Maxi Gawn. But looking at some of his match stats, 14 contested possessions, love to see that from a ruckman. He's clearly getting in there, getting the quick handballs out to the ball users that can use it a bit nicer. I also think there's probably a little bit of upside there. North got absolutely smashed on the weekend, and I think that's going to be a little bit of a trend. I think we can all agree with that. And what that'll result in is a bit of chip footy, because they want to keep the ball off the opposition, stop some of that bleeding on the scoreboard, and just play a bit more possession. That's where I think there is some upside for Tristan Cherry. You can get out a few more uncontested marks, a few more outlet kicks. That's always nice. But that's pretty much my spiel there, mate. He's exactly what you want in terms of a mid-price player at 600K. And the positive here is that not only, let's say, he draws even with Brody Grundy, they both average the same for the next 3 weeks, then Brody Grundy's got the buy. Tristan Cherry, he's going right through. So if he keeps that up, he's outscoring Brody Grundy anyway. Brody Grundy doesn't have necessarily that cash generation in him anymore. He might spike a game and get it going again, but Tristan Cherry is on the way up, and I think you got to jump on now.
It's good. Monk, yeah, you want to jump in there?
Oh, that score was built off a relatively low stoppage number. Like, there was only, I think, 66 ruck contests in that game. Normally, most games have around about the 90 to 100 marker. And Cherry's quite a good tap ruckman as well. So he might not get 8 or 9 tackles every game, but he's probably going to get more hit outs a game. And you look at the run he's got coming up. He's got Fremantle who are rocking with just Jackson at the moment. Then he comes up against Carlton, who are just playing Tom De Koning. So it's not like it's the dual ruck setup anymore for either of those two teams, where you can get punished a bit more around the ground. Brisbane at Norwood Oval was probably a bit trickier against Oscar McInerney. But then he comes up against Reece Stanley, Mark Blitzard, whoever they decide to play, whoever Chris Scott decides is the ruckman for that particular week. You know, even at that point, who knows, they might even bring in whatever their rookie is. I can't remember the name of him. Toby Conway could be coming in at that point, who knows? But it's a pretty good matchup for 3 out of the next 4 rounds. And that's exactly what you're wanting for a player to spike in cash. Like, by the end of round 5, he could easily be in that high 800K marker. And then it's a very, very easy flip to whoever of the ruckman you want to go to from there.
Yeah, it's a good shout. Rids, let's talk to me about Riley Bonner. You mentioned that he was a part of your in-round pivot that you'd kind of planned as a parachute option, no doubt presenting, you know, fantastic value at that 500K marker. Jack Sinclair, the club have moved him into the available component of their injury list. So we want to talk about Riley Bonner for sure, and I'll get your take on him in a moment. But alongside that, can you also include, does the returning Jack Sinclair bring any level of concern that it might clamp his ceiling just that little bit?
I think there was enough to view on the weekend to say that Riley Bonner is a part of that St. Kilda plan to move forward. That's the first thing. Whether he has a bad game and then falls out of favour and that's where Jack Sinclair replaces him, that's the problem, okay? It's not whether Jack Sinclair is going to come in and just instantly that means Riley Bonner is going to be a green vest the next minute because there's no more role for him. It's going to be that adds an element, yeah? We saw with Hayden Young on the weekend, MJ, Fremantle had a couple of injuries. And what happened to Hayden Young? He went back because that's all they could do because the circumstances presented for it. But the thing with this one is if Jack Sinclair is there, and even if he's playing mid this week, but Riley Bonner has 15 turnovers and everything else, and St. Kilda like got smashed, that means that's the question mark then.
Yeah.
That's what you've got to worry about. It's not whether Jack Sinclair is going to take a piece of the pie, because guess what? Riley Bonner's 500,000. Are we like, I mean, how much off the pie is Sinclair going to take? If you think Bonner's going to go 85, what? You want Sinclair to eat 20 points into that 85? Like, I mean, really, he is priced to accommodate, yeah?
Oh, even I mean, if he goes like 60, he's making 30 grand this week.
Yeah. I think the other thing you have to consider, though, is it's not just that Sinclair's coming in, it's the difficulty in matchup. And yes, they're playing Geelong at GBHBA, which is tends to be somewhat of a friendly matchup for defenders. It's not, you know, a be-all and end-all, but this week they're coming against Collingwood. And that's not an easy matchup for distributors to get a good score in. It's not too bad. But the other thing is it locks you into that trade as well. They play on Thursday night this week. We won't know any of the subs from any of the other games. We won't know any of the carnage that might happen. We might have only had an hour to react after teams have dropped. That's a big call to make to be moving into someone and having that as the risks associated with them as a trade-in this week.
Yeah, it is.
And so, MJ, you just mentioned a minute ago that this was part of my pivot.
Yes.
Because I had forecasted that matchup in round two, and I knew it was going to be a hard decision for me to trade into Bonner if he did pop this week. So I went, you know what? I'm going to go and take a bit of blind faith and jump on him and hope for the best. Yeah, sometimes we just got to do a gut feel move, yeah? But if you notice what's coming up in the near future, then that sets you up to be able to jump in and try and mitigate that risk somewhat.
Yeah. No, it's a good shout. We talked about that game, the St. Kilda Geelong game. Louis Ollie Dempsey could not have been more impressive. Now a 300K forward for us, one of the best break evens, went over 90 for us in AFL fantasy. Seeing a lot of people deprioritize him and prioritize others that we'll get to in a moment, such as a Sharp, a D'Ambrosio, Bonner, who we've already alluded to, and a Billings, who I do want to have a conversation about shortly as well. All important to consider, but how high up the trade priority should Ollie Dempsey be? Because role was great, impacting the score great. Friday night matchup, probably not ideal in terms of what we're talking about there. But what's your take on Ollie Dempsey and how urgent a priority he should be for us? Because I think the vast majority of the community don't have Ollie in their team.
Honestly, high priority. He is playing probably the third best rookie role that I love. So pure midfield, great. Half back, great. Ollie Dempsey's playing that high half forward role. So he's getting up the ground, helping his teammates, getting, you know, little outlet kicks and marks up there and then pushing back hard and impacting the scoreboard. And we know it only takes one goal to whack 9 points on your score. He's got that job security too. I get that feeling. Chris Scott gave him massive adulation after that game. He did it in the preseason too, pumped out a 75, looked great there. I wish I picked him. I was pretty keen, but that's okay. And more importantly, you've actually seen it now. So he's got that minus 10 break even. That's going to go up, what, maybe 50K this week if he pops a 60. I'm not sure what the matchup is. If you guys have it on him,
the Crows this week.
Yeah, yeah. So he's got plenty of space in Adelaide over to work with there. I don't mind that matchup. I think he's got to be a high priority because there's also not many, unless you missed a Sharp as well, he's probably the main rookie that's putting his hand up in terms of identifying as a cash rise early.
Yeah, it's a good shout. We speak about Jeremy Sharp. Mini Monk, you've already referenced him already on this episode. You've been quite bullish on him through the preseason. He was featured through the 50 most relevant for us. Outside of Dempsey, Louis said Sharp's probably the only other cash cow of high priority that people might not own. I know Howes has got one of the better break evens, but I'm only going to make the assumption that coaches panel listeners had started with him, especially based off what we saw in opening round.
Yeah.
How important is a Jeremy Sharp to go and get?
I think I outlined why I think he's so important earlier on when we were talking about best 18. I think his matchup this week is, you know, phenomenal. There's every chance that he goes an 80 plus score again. I mean, he went 79 on the weekend against Brisbane, who are not known for being a particularly good team to score against for wingers. And, you know, he's playing under the roof against North Melbourne. Frio might have to revert back to a bit more of the chipmunk game style with the loss in cattle that they've had down back and with their small forward loss and loss of Cox up forward as well, which is funny because he was a defender. But that will only benefit someone like Sharp as well, because he really got involved and he's got running through the game was just what made the difference, I think, in terms of his being able to score. I think he scored fairly consistently through the four quarters. He was able to get from one end of the ground to the other. There's not going to be many rookie price players that have that sort of a tank to be able to run out games. And he's never going to be a sub risk. He's either going to be playing a game or he's not going to be playing a game. And that's
AFL or waffle.
Exactly. And that can't be overstated for players that were looking at rookies, because sometimes you might just rather have a red dot than have that purple dot in them come on for a 15, 20 point cameo. It's never going to stun his cash gen. You're never going to get stung by a late out or a late change or whatever that's going to be, or the vesting coming off of the bench now. And that ceiling potential is just there. Like, if he comes out and scores 100 this week, how are you getting him next week if you don't get him this week? The simple answer is you're probably not. It's probably too late by that point.
Yeah, other priorities well and truly start to emerge the deeper into the season that you get. Three more players I want to hit. We were going to do a Q&A at the end of the episode, but just for sake of time, we're going to make that a Patreon exclusive. They're the ones that have asked the questions. I will service them with a exclusive bonus episode that is coming for our Patreons. If you're not a Patreon, you're missing out, my friends. All the details are in the link of the description of this episode. You can jump in as the lowest tier level of cash cow for $2 a month, or you can jump right up to the premium tiers. And there's a bunch of different rewards that you get, whether they be the round review podcasts, extra in-season content, hidden groups, or the opportunity to get your question answered in a podcast, whether that be the roundtable strategy, or we always will do a pop-up extra for you if we do run out of time for it. But three players left, I want to ask you. Rids, like many, we all exist in our own little content creators group. Most of us, let's be honest, all have a group of friends, people we play fantasy footy with. And depending on the activity of that community, it is high level of notification city. And on Sunday afternoon, you let us know in no uncertain terms. None of us really knew each other's teams, by the way. We kind of build them in isolation. We've got a bit of visibility, but we build them in isolation. It was very clear based on some of the notifications that were pinging through. Had Billings not been Goodwined in round of opening, he was in your team. Thankfully, because of said vest, his price movement really hasn't kick-started at all. Talk to me about Jack Billings, how viable he is this week, how realistic is that scoring that we saw, and then lastly, does the buy at the back of this buy round block impact any of these variables for you at all?
Okay, because I'm not the only one on the panel tonight that was big on Billings, because I know my friend over in Adelaide, who we won't talk about the pear-coloured shirt or anything like that, but he was huge on Billings, yeah?
Yeah.
But the thing is, Melbourne's a good team. They're right in contention. Like, I mean, they're not far away from a top four team at this point in time. Billings is everything that they need. He's a hard worker. He's smart with ball in hand. He's a good decision maker. He uses it well. I mean, you think about over the last couple of years, MJ, Billings is pretty much what Melbourne's missed, yeah, entering into the forward 50.
Good user inside forward 50.
That's what they wanted. Like, and he was available late last year in the trade period, and they went out and grabbed him because they knew what their deficiency was. The thing that I didn't quite understand was, even with all that, Stupid Goodwin, and I'll call him Stupid Goodwin from now on, he puts Laurie and Spargo in before him.
Spargo, I get, but yeah.
I just don't get it. I don't understand it because, like, it's just going back to deja vu, you know, from last year. Like, these are the guys that burnt you going into the 50. Like, you got a guy on the bench. Like, and I know that it wasn't the greatest conditions and everything in opening round, but you got to go find out what you actually got. What's the cattle you actually brought into the team? How does he look? Because it might only be one or two things. But Billings, what was the other question? Is he going to score 140 and take 15 marks every week? No.
Well, yeah, I alluded to that, but thank you.
Yeah. But does he need to? No. Yeah,
not anymore.
The forward line is so rubbish this year, okay? We've been lucky the last couple of weeks because we've had the Jackson and the Heaney trains come in. How long are they going to stay at that station? Who knows? Yeah, that's anyone's guess at this point in time. But the fact of the matter is, Billings has done 85 in years gone by. And he's playing for a better team. He actually has work rate, mate. He pushes up the ground. There's a lot of plus sixes in his game right now. And Melbourne is very, very good with the ball coming out of their 50. You think about the names, Rivers, May, Lever, you know, Bowie when he's there, Salem.
Yeah.
They're going to find this guy with his work rate. And we saw it on the weekend, yeah? He was working up and down that wing and he was taking mark after mark after mark. And that wasn't because no one was near him. That was through work rate. We can't leave that, yeah?
No, we can't. Louis, you wanted to jump in there, and I think Mini Monk's got some thoughts on Billings as well before we move off.
Yeah, no, I was just going to piggyback off the back of Rids there. I think Billings is a great pick and he's spot on in terms of role. There clearly was a directive to Jack Billings to use the ball by foot. You know, 20 kicks is clear direction there, and went inside 50 fantastically. Disposal efficiency of 74%, which means he's using it well. I love seeing that there's plenty of inside 50s, but not only that, rebound 50. So that suggests to me that he's working up and down the ground. 15 uncontested marks, his teammates are looking for him, which I love that. I think the biggest thing that stood out for me in terms of the stat sheet was 10 score involvements. That is just absolutely nuts. That's right up there. I wouldn't be surprised if that was, not sure who the highest averaging one last year would have been, but I think that would be smashing it out of the park. So I really like to see that. It's really encouraging. And he's got the low break even to make it a slightly lower risk move as well. I don't think there's much risk there, but when you are jumping on these mid prices, you do want them to at least go at sort of 75, 80 plus. Personally, I think he can go at 80 plus pretty comfortably within that role. 15 marks every single week is obviously not going to happen, but sometimes it's about what you see and what the player is doing. And for that reason, I'm really bullish on Billings.
It's good. Yeah. I think I was just going to say, like, if you got 3 weeks, 4 weeks that you can look at him as well. Now he's got the round six bye. Most teams aren't actually loading up that heavily on that round six bye. The only players I think of that might actually be on there for teams is Gorn and maybe a Seth Campbell. But probably by that point, you're looking to offload him. He's probably reached his max as a rookie. So he's the perfect guy to be able to take on. And the other thing I really like about it as well is it's the forward spot. Like, he's taking up a forward spot that most teams are running one, if not two rookies in there. You're pushing one of those weaker rookies off. Say it's a Lazaro, say it's a Cadman, say it's a Dempsey who you might bring in this week, say it's a Reed or a Wilson, depending on matchups. And it goes back to what I was talking about before, about being able to bring that midfield rookie on. You're able to field, you know, Roberts, Kircher, Sharp and Sanders, who are probably the four best rookies that we have at this point in time. If you're trading a midfielder into your forward line, like if you go someone like a Newcomb, someone like an Amon, someone like a Wines to a Billings, that sets you up really nicely for targeting ceiling scores out of your rookies. And I think that that's why he's a really interesting pick for this week.
Yeah, it's a really good shout. Last two players I want to get your boys' thoughts on. Louis, might stay with you on this one. I don't know if everyone's got the ability to access into him. Probably those that have had a failed mid-price defender are the most likely to consider him. I'm alluding to Mossimo D'Ambrosio. Incredible role. A lot of contested possessions when you look through that too. This isn't just a guy freewheeling, getting the uncontested chip and kick in roll. He's not got any of that. Sicily's clear to play, by the way, if you're just catching it up. He's got no charge to answer for. He's going to play. But what's your take on the Moss? Is he an absolute ripping option? I know Buderick owners are probably lamenting how it all went for them this week. But is he as up there in the conversation of players we have to look at this week?
Look, it's going to be within the context of your side, of course. I think he's a great pick. I think the gloss has just been taken off a little bit because we do have a Bonner, we do have a Billings. But in terms of a debut for Hawthorn and for his fans especially, he couldn't have done anything more. 29 disposals, nice kick-to-handball ratio. You mentioned those contested possessions too, MJ. I didn't think he had that within his game. So that was really good to see. He didn't really strike me as that traditional halfback, though. He was really pushing up quite high up the ground, which may explain that sort of absence of kick-ins. I really like that he got six coaches votes too. That suggests to me that there's two coaches that have gone, okay, this guy really hurt us today, really enjoyed his game. I'm going to flick him a couple of votes. There's a little tip of the hat for you. Where there's a little bit of uneasiness, I think, is that there were a couple of Hawthorn players within that side that really underperformed based on what we've seen in the past. So Sicily going 30, that doesn't often happen. Jack Scrimshaw, he's not a lockdown defender. They've said he's not going to be a lockdown defender. He's better than the 33 that he was at. Can't remember what Hardwick scored, but it was low 50s. He's in defense. He's better than that. So Carl Amon, another one, probably underscored a little bit. And
yeah.
I'm not sure if that's just because of the accuracy of Essendon and there wasn't as much chip turnover ball within their defensive 50. But I do have some questions over when those players sort of raise their floor a little bit, whether Massimo's ceiling comes down a little bit. But in terms of just an individual performance, looking at him in a vacuum, that was a perfect game, something that you wanted to see out of Massimo D'Ambrosio if you were keen. And that defender status really helps. And if you do want to get off of a Buderick straight away, cut your losses, go across, bank the 30, 40, 50K maybe, if he absolutely pops one next week. And I don't see this pick as being a bad one, and I don't see it as being one that burns you either necessarily, because that cash generation is starting to be built in now.
Last player we want to talk about before we wrap up the episode. Rids, talk to me about Caleb Sarong. When you spend big dollars, and I'm talking $950,000+ in AFL fantasy in your starting squad, there's a lot of different reasons you do that, but one thing you want to see from them early is you want to see them give you bang for your buck and deliver points. And undoubtedly, Caleb Sarong did that for us in spades on the weekend. Huge score. It's going to be hard to top for anyone to match past that 160 sort of score levels. But talk to me, for people that are looking at premium mids, maybe it's Bont owners, Dawson owners, those getting a Newcomb or a Wines up or an Amon up, is this a pretty urgent priority? Could he do what Clayton Oliver did for us last year, which is pretty much start the season as that 120 plus premium mid and boy, just look like they could take a season away from you? Is Sarong this important to consider early days?
I love the word that you used, urgent. Is he an urgent priority? No, he isn't, because he's priced at 113 now. So unless you think he's going to actually go at 125, 130 for the next period of time, then he's not an urgent priority. But you know what he is? He's an interesting priority. Because the fact of the matter is, he might be the number one mid this year. And we've only got a small data size, yeah? So there's an element that we're chasing points here, MJ. Absolutely, there's an element of it. Rightio? But, I mean, what else can the guy do to actually prove that he's ready to take the next step, yeah? And we saw it last year with Tom Green. Sometimes these guys just come along and just pop because they've hit that age. They've hit that development in their – they're confident in their body. They're confident in their role in the team. And that's the main point, the role in the team, MJ, that I want to say. Caleb Sarong is the number one mid. You ask any Freo fan right now. Monk is one of – I mean – Monk goes around, he's got purple shirts, purple everything. I think his headphones are purple.
Can't you see my hair's dyed purple? Gosh.
But it's not even a discussion anymore. You know, 1 year ago, there was a discussion. Who's the number one mid at Fremantle? Now, no, there's no discussion. It's Caleb Sarong.
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole point of this, okay? When Hayden Young went into that midfield, who was the guy that was moved out of it? It was potentially, and I'm not saying it's all the time, but it was a Brayshaw to a point on the wing, on the half forward role. It wasn't Caleb Sarong, was it? Mm-hmm. He is the one that Fremantle have set their midfield around. Like, there is a world, he's our number one mid right now. There is a world, he's the cheapest we're going to get him, is right now.
Mm-hmm.
Willing to pay that though, yeah?
That's the balance.
Are we going to take that risk? Because when we pay up, we have to go and take that risk because one poor performance drops you cash.
Well, Dawson and Bontempelli gave that, and they weren't poor, but they weren't 110 plus.
Yeah, but guess what, mate? We've said it from day one, yeah? The only time the dollars really matter is if you trade in or out of someone.
Correct.
Okay. But guess what? You're the one who just framed that question a minute ago. Do we want to trade out of a Bont, out of a Dawson to get into a Sarong? I would say no. Okay. What's the best avenue? Well, if you do have a Newcomb Wines combination in that midfield, why not go down to, if you feel big on Bonner, why not go to Bonner and then go up the other way? Yeah. And if that gets you to Sarong, well, happy days, yeah? But just remember, the priority is your cash generation. So it's that second trade you're going to do. If you're big on Sarong, I would not talk anyone out of going there, okay? But it's the second trade you have to nail to make sure you're maintaining that cash generation right now.
Mini-Mark, any last thoughts?
I was just going to say, I think that Rids has nailed it in terms of the mids that are at Freo. They're going to be a relatively high stoppage team. They showed the intensity that you'd want as a fan on the weekend, and that was really great to see. But if you look at the CBA rate, Sarong had 23, Fife 21, Brayshaw 19, Young 16, and Young really dropped a lot in that last quarter when he had to go back to cover the injuries. And I just want to alleviate anyone's fears. That's not going to be his normal. He is going to go straight back into that midfield once the team sheets come in for round two. Don't stress there. And then the only other player that got CBAs as a midfielder was Johnson. And he had two. And that was basically because he had to go and fill in there in the last quarter when they swung Young back. I haven't actually done a quarter-by-quarter breakdown, but I don't think that if I look at it quickly now, he had one out of his two in the last quarter, which is when Young basically didn't go into the midfield at all. Young didn't have a single CBA in that last quarter.
No, he played almost key defense in that last
quarter. Exactly. So, yes, Rids is 100% correct. High stoppage team, high CBA rate midfielder, Saron could be the top averaging player in AFL fantasy for the year. And he's right. This could be the cheapest price you ever get him, but it's a tricky decision to make. But if you want to go for it, then by all means go for it.
Yeah. In a month's time, you're going to get potentially around that 950 to 900 range. Bont, Goulden, Oliver, Dawson, all of these guys, the top end of the tree last year. So certainly you're going to get good options with Sarong. We know what he was all last year. One of the most reliable 100 plus performers year round. And he definitely looks like he's taken his game to another level.
I'll tell you what though, MJ, it is a small sample size. It's one game. Okay.
Very much so.
I want to throw the other side of the shoe because I was just really, really glowing with Sarong just a second ago.
Please.
There is an element of chasing points here. He had 46 disposals. He looked a world beater. Everything fell for him. Okay. That could be his ceiling score for the year.
Very likely.
Okay. Let's go in with an element of understanding. And I know that I was listening to Hat Chat the other day and they were mentioning about Matty Mottram and the year that he jumped onto Andrew Brayshaw when he had the 180 and then jumped on afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But that was after multiple games, yeah?
That was a
different scenario altogether. And Matt is a different kind of coach. He's just at that GOAT level, yeah? Whereas us poor, you know,
mere mortals, plotters,
we just go and do whatever. Like, but the fact of the matter is, you got to back your gut, and it's got to be dependent on who you're trading out and what that second trade is. Because do not lose sight of the cash generation aspects of this early season in AF.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way for us to land this episode and a great reminder as we head into our second week of AFL Fantasy. Rids, as always, a pleasure, mate. Thanks for jumping on this episode.
Easy as, mate.
Mini Monk, as always, a pleasure. You and your Dockers have started the year just beautifully, as always.
Oh, I haven't started quite as well as them, but let's try and get the season back on track.
Absolutely. And Louis, like one of my favorite people to talk fantasy footy with, up and about, ready for a big year. He's got the one victory in the Content Creators Cup already. Here come the finals for your pair and also in the Content Creators Cup, mate. Well done.
Good episode, boys. Thanks for having me.
If you want to go back and check out any of the other podcasts from the preseason, I don't know why you'd like to, but if you really just want to go back, you can. Wherever you're checking this out on the podcast, you can go and listen back to that. Or you can watch this and every other episode live, dropping on YouTube every single time we have them. You can go and check them out as well. If you haven't subscribed to our YouTube channel, make sure you go and check that out. All the details for where you can get in touch with the boys across social media, as well as being part of our Patreon supporter group, you can find in the description of this episode. Coming inside the next 24 hours, a super coach strategy roundtable. So if you play multi formats, the good news, the coaches panel, we got you covered in 2024 with two strategy roundtables focused on the strategy of the format you play and love. So we can get really granular and focused for you with the advice we give. We wish you all the best in round two. Don't forget, best 18, no Blues, no Carlton players, some loopholes available for you and an opportunity to maximize your points. Good luck this week. And from all of us here at the coaches panel, we'll chat to you soon.